Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Apostolic Seminary and Congregation of Mount Zion, Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is April 25, 2017. Our is April 29, 2021. We will start our first service today with a song entitled "In the Garden." I come to the garden alone. I come to the garden alone. All the dew is still on the roses, and the voice I hear calling on my hair, the Son of God discloses. And he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I'm his own, and the joy we share is sweet every day. None other has ever known. He speaks and the sound of his voice is so sweet, the birds hush their singing. The melody that he gave to me within my heart is ringing. And he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I'm his own. The joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known. I stay in the garden with him, though the night around me be falling. When he bids me go through the forest of woe, his voice to me is calling. And he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I'm his own, and the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known. Gentiles, part 6. Let's continue now with our study on we're in Acts chapter 1, where we started and we ended on verse 8. Let's do review on verse 7 and 8. No, verse 6, 7 and 8. And when they therefore were come together, they asked of him, saying, Master, Yeshua, wilt thou at this time restore again the kingdom unto Israel? Now they knew that the kingdom of Israel had been restored once before unto Israel, when Judah came out of captivity in 535 B.C., off from under the 70-year Nebuchadnezzar's reign. They came out of Babylon, and that might have very well been a type for the Revelation 18, called out of Babylon again, because Judah was called out of Babylon. They said, come out of her, my people, that you be the partakers of her sins, received not of her plague. But Revelation 18 is calling them out of the whole world, whereas the time when they were called out of, at the end of Nebuchadnezzar's reign over them for 70 years, they were called out of Babylon. to come back to their homeland. And that's when, that's what the disciples were referring to, was that will you again at this time restore the kingdom? And he said unto them, it's not for you to know the times or the season, which the Father hath put in his own power. So, he said it wasn't time for you to know the times of the season. But you shall receive power after that the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you shall be witnesses unto me both in Jerusalem and in all Judea and in Samaria and unto the uttermost part of the earth. So apparently, the disciples hadn't been a witness unto all of Judea up to that time. So Yahshua is telling the disciples, you're wanting the kingdom restored. You won't know when the kingdom's going to be restored unto Israel. And they didn't realize that Yahshua had already restored the kingdom unto them, Israel, and they were his leadership. He had already restored it unto them. But they were thinking about restoring the physical temple, restoring the physical land of Israel and getting rid of all the enemies. That's what they were actually thinking of, but when they asked the question, wilt thou at this time restore again the kingdom of Israel? Well, Yahshua says there in Luke 17, he told them that the kingdom of Yahweh cometh not with observation, but the kingdom of Yahweh is within you. And that's right there in Luke 17:20. And when he was demanded the Pharisees when the kingdom of Yahweh should come, he answered them and said, the kingdom of Yahweh cometh not with the observation. Neither shall they say, lo here, lo there, for behold, the kingdom of Yahweh is within you. Now, who is he talking to? The Pharisees were demanding of him when the kingdom of Yahweh should come, and he answered them and said, the kingdom of Yahweh cometh not with the observation. Neither shall they say, lo here or lo there, for behold, the kingdom of Yahweh is within you. Now, what was Yahshua telling the Pharisees? He said, you have the kingdom of Yahweh within you, and you don't even know it. You're wondering when the kingdom of Yahweh should come, and you have the kingdom of Yahweh already within you, and you don't even know it. Blind guides, that's what Yahshua ended up calling. You're a bunch of blind guides. You don't know anything about what constitutes the kingdom, because Israel inherited the kingdom. When Yahweh created Israel with Abraham through Isaac, when he raised up Isaac to be the spiritual progenitor of the righteous line from Abraham, he created the kingdom of heaven and with Israel. And they don't know this, that the Pharisees are the descendants of Abraham. They're Israelites. They don't know their genealogy. They don't know their ancestry. They don't know anything about the law of Moses and the covenant that Yahweh made with Abraham. Yet the Pharisees rewrote the first five books of the law of Moses and the Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. They rewrote those five books. And they rewrote them with 613 additional precepts. And then they corrupted the law of Moses, and so they didn't have a clue about who they really were. They didn't even know who they really were. And Yahshua is telling them, the kingdom of Yahweh cometh not with the observation. Now shall they say, lo here or lo there, for behold, the kingdom of Yahweh is within you. It's within you. All you have to do is go and pick up the law of Moses, 100%, and reapply them, and delete your 613 additional precepts that you added to what you call the Torah and added to the law of Moses. You want to have the preeminence over Moses. You want to write the law. Yahweh wrote the law and gave it to Moses. But you all want to rewrite Yahweh's law. That's where the change of the scriptures came in at. The Pharisees are the first one to rewrite the scriptures. In Luke 17:22, and he said unto the disciples, the days will come when you shall desire to see one of the days of the Son of Man, and you shall not see it. Well, Abraham desired to see one of the days of the Son of Man, and so Yahweh said, okay, take your son Isaac upon the mountain and sacrifice him, and I'll show you one of the days of the Son of Man. So Abraham asked for a sign, and Yahweh gave it to him. And they shall say to you, Luke 17:23, and they shall say unto you, see here, or see there. Go not after them, nor follow them. For as the lightning that lighteneth out of the one part under the heavens shineth unto the other part under the heaven, so shall also the Son of Man be in his day. Okay. But first must he suffer many things, and be rejected of this generation. And as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be also in the days of the Son of Man. Now here it is right here. Same thing as it says in Matthew 24, basically. Matthew 24:37 says the same thing. Okay, it says in Luke 17:27, they did eat, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and the flood came and destroyed them all. Likewise also as it was in the days of Lot, they did eat, they drank, they bought, they sowed, they planted, they built it. But the same day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Even thus shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. Okay. When the Son of Man is revealed. It didn't say when the Son of Man is come. It says it's going to be the same way when the Son of Man is revealed. Someone's going to reveal the Son of Man. And I can take you right now to Malachi chapter 3, the prophecy of Malachi chapter 3, and show you exactly who this is that's going to reveal the Son of Man. It's the same people fully like him. And let's just go read Malachi chapter 3. It says, behold, I will send my messenger. This is antitypical Elijah. And he shall prepare the way before me. Now this is Yahshua talking, the Son. And the Yahshua, whom you seek, shall suddenly come to his temple. So, where is the Son of Man going to be revealed at? He's going to be revealed when he comes to his temple. Well, then you better know where the temple is at, if you want to meet the Son of Man when he comes again. Even the messenger of the covenant, whom you delight in, behold, he shall come, saith the Yahshua of hosts. But who may abide the day of his coming, and who shall stand when he appeareth? For he is like a refiner's fire. Now, I want to back up a little bit. I'm going a little bit too fast here. He says, even the messenger of the covenant. Who's the messenger of the covenant? And typically Elijah, Malachi 4:5. But who may abide the day of his coming? And who shall stand when he appeareth? For he is like a refiner's fire, like fuller soap. And he shall sit as a refiner and purifier of silver. And he shall purify the sons of Levi and purge them as gold and silver, that they may offer unto the Yahweh an offering in righteousness. Then shall the offering of Judah and Jerusalem, okay, the Judah now is the members of the temple. This is your laity that come in from the surrounding countries of Judea that come into Jerusalem for the annual feast at least three times a year. And so this is what it's talking about. It says, then shall the offering of Judah, when they come into Jerusalem, Jerusalem is the headquarters where 10% of the population live in Jerusalem, not in the outlying countries of Judea, but it's the leadership that lives in Jerusalem, the priests and the rabbis and so forth. It says, then shall the offering of Judah and Jerusalem be pleasant unto the Yahweh, as in the days of old, and as in the former years. And I will come near unto you to, unto judgment, and I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers, and against the adulterers, and against the false swearers, and against those that oppress the hireling in his wages, the widow and the fatherless, and that turn aside the stranger from his right, and fear not me, saith Yahweh of hosts. Now this is the Yahshua of hosts, the Son. For I am the Yahshua, I change not, therefore you sons of Jacob are not consumed. Even from the days of your fathers you have gone away from mine ordinances and have not kept them. Return unto me, and I will return unto you, saith the Yahshua of the host. But you said, when shall we return? Will a man rob Yahweh? Yet you have robbed me, but you say, wherein have we robbed thee? And tithes and offering. You are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house. And prove me now herewith, saith the Yahshua of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven, and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. And I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the fruits of your ground, neither shall your vine cast her fruit before the time of the field, saith the Yahshua of the host. And all nations shall call you blessed, for you shall be a delightsome land, saith the Yahshua of host. Your words have been stout against me, saith the Yahshua, yet you say, what have we spoken so much against thee? Ye have said it is vain to serve Yahweh, and what profit is it that we have kept his ordinance, and that we have walked mournfully before the Yahshua of hosts, and now we call the proud happy, yea, they that work wickedness are set up, yea, they that tempt Yahweh are even delivered. Then they that fear the Yahshua spake often one to another, and the Yahshua hearken and heard it, and a book of remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Yahshua and that thought upon his name. Now, why do we know that this is Yahshua with the book of remembrance that was written before him? When the sinner brought his animal sacrifice to the outer court back in the time of the Old Testament, under the law of Moses, he would bring his offering. And he had to slay that lamb. And the priest would come out there to that altar. And he would catch the blood of that lamb. And he would take that blood of the lamb, and he'd take it inside of the sanctuary in the first apartment. And he'd take the blood and sprinkle it upon the four corners of the horns of the altar. Of the altar of remission. There in the first apartment. And then he would take a book. The priest would go and open up a book. And he'd put the name of that person in that book that he had built this sacrifice today for remission of sin that he had committed. So that priest wrote it in a book. It was called the Book of Remembrance. Okay. So, today, when a sinner confesses his sin and turns away from his sin, he goes to repent. Yahshua meets him, and he takes his offering. And Yahshua takes his blood offering, the blood of sprinkling, Hebrews 12, 22, 24. He takes his blood of sprinkling, and he adds to that repentant sin, and he take and open up a book, and he writes it in a book. It's called a Book of Remembrance. That's the job of the high priest in the sanctuary. That's his job. Well, then we have a recording angel, records our deeds on a day-to-day basis. We have that situation, a Book of Remembrance. Angels and the high priest write the Book of Remembrance. And then whenever they present this Book of Remembrance on the Day of Atonement before the Father and says, Yahshua says, my blood is being offered to cover the sins that are written in this Book of Remembrance. Okay. So in Malachi 3, it says, verse 16, then they that feared the Yeshua spake that often one to another, and the Yeshua hearkened and heard it. And the Book of Remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Yeshua and that thought upon his name. Okay, so when you come and meet him at his daily appointments that he has at the 9 and the 3 o'clock, when you get that organized and you do that every day, then he's there to meet with you and to energize you. So Schwartz mentions this in Desire of Ages. She said he meets with us at these appointed times to energize us and to give us the blessings that we ask for. Okay, and in Malachi 3:17, and they shall be mine, said the Yahshua of the host, in that day when I make up my jewel, and I will spare them as a man spares his own son that serveth him. Then shall you return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serveth Yahweh and him that serveth him not. Okay, that's in the Malachi chapter 3. Let's go right on into Malachi chapter 4. For behold, the day cometh that shall burn as an oven, and all the proud yea and all that do wickedly shall be stubble. And the day that cometh shall burn them up, saith Yahshua of hosts, that it shall leave them neither root nor branch, but unto you that fear my name. Here's that fear my name again, see? Shall the Son of Righteousness arise with healing in his wings, and he shall go forth and grow up as calves of the stall. But unto you that fear my name shall the Son of Righteousness arise with healing in his wings, and ye shall go forth and grow up as calves of the stall. Calves of the stall grow up within 1 year from the time they're born. And you shall tread down the wicked, for there shall be ashes on the soles of your feet in the day that I shall do this, saith Yahshua of hosts. Remember ye the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded unto him in Horeb for all Israel, with the statutes and judgment. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet for the coming of the great and dreadful day of Yahweh, and he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, and the heart of the children unto their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. Acts chapter 1, let's continue on here. Let's read verse number 6 again. And when they therefore were come together, they asked of him, saying, Yahshua, wilt thou at this time restore again the kingdom unto Israel? Okay, now the disciples are indicating here by their question that the Yeshua had was responsible for restoring the first temple that was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar in 586 B.C. Okay, this is very interesting. So the disciples, they knew their prophecy, and they knew that the one that they were talking to was the one that was responsible for directing the restoration of the temple the first time. And that was in charge of Nehemiah and Ezra, the scribe, and Zerubbabel, when they came out of Babylonian captivity in around 535 B.C., Yahshua directed them and the 50,000. He was the one that led them out of Judean captivity. Well, Yahshua was the one with Moses that led the children of Israel out of captivity of Egypt over 100 years earlier. So now here they are asking the question, Master, Yahshua, will thou at this time restore again the kingdom of Israel? So, the disciples knew that it's imperative that the Jerusalem be restored. It has to be restored. And they thought that it would take place in their day, so they thought that they were in the end time, that Yahshua had come the first time, and that first time was the real time for the bringing this world to an end. He only brought the Old Testament world to an end, but they didn't realize that the New Testament means new beginnings of this world. And Noah's day after the flood, there was when he came out of the ark with his family and the animals, that was new beginnings of this world. Adam had the first beginning, Noah had the second beginning, Yahshua at the cross had the third beginning, and the 144,000, when they come forth, will have the fourth beginning. I got something very interesting. I think I'm going to break off and read it now, that we need to bring in here at this time. And that's from the Shepherd Rod. The V.T. Hollis. And that's track, that's Shepherd Rod, Volume 1. And he's dealing with the Ezekiel Chapter 4 prophecy. I want to pick this up and just bring it right on into this study now. Okay, actually I said Zechariah 4 says Ezekiel Chapter 4. It says, the prophecy of Ezekiel 4, what transpires within the 390 days. For I have laid upon thee the years of the iniquity according to the number of the days. 390 days, and so shalt thou bear the iniquity of the house of Israel. Now the reason I'm bringing in Ezekiel 4 at this time is because we're going to develop into this number 7, which means the perfect number. And this number 7 is shows that this is the number that will take place with the 144,000 represent this number 7. The Adventists represent the number 6, incomplete number. And so it says that, well, matter of fact, I just go into 7 perfect number right now. It's on page 126 of Shepherd God, Volume 1. They said, in this prophecy, we find that there are only 6 portions, and only 6 steps have been made. Luther, Knox, Wesley, Campbell, Miller, and White. The number 6 is not a perfect number. It is evident then that there is still another portion to follow, and a step to climb. 7 is a perfect biblical number. The question is, why was not the 7th portion included in this prophecy of Ezekiel, I believe, 4? Because the 6th were polluted, defiled with man's preparation. Man's thoughts and plans have been injected and followed, which in Yahweh's sight are as dung. It is not to be so with the 7th, for it is the last, it must be pure, the last portion. Pure and undefiled is represented by the angel Revelation 18:1. And after these things I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lighted with his glory. It is at this time that Isaiah's prophecy will be fulfilled in Isaiah 52:1-2. Awake, awake, put on thy strength, O Zion, put on thy beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city, for henceforth there shall no more come into thee the uncircumcised and the unclean. Shake thyself from the dust, arise and sit down, O Jerusalem. Loose thyself from the bands of thy neck, O captive daughter of Zion. Yahweh's pure congregation. Note the last part of the first verse, for henceforth there shall no more come into thee the uncircumcised and the unclean. There has always been in the congregation the uncircumcised, the unclean, and the unconverted. In all our history, but here the prophet declares that there shall be no more. Let's give thanks unto our Yahweh for this precious promise and for the revelation of his word. Zephaniah also declares, the remnant of Israel shall not do iniquity nor speak lie, neither shall a deceitful tongue be found in their mouth, for they shall feed and lie down, and none shall make them afraid. The prophets and kings, page 725, we read, clad in the armor of the Yahshua's righteousness, the congregation is to enter upon her final conflict, fair as the moon, clear as the sun, and terrible as an army with banners. She is to go forth into all the world, conquering and to conquer. It could be explained that this brings us to the opening of the 7th seal of Revelation 8:1. Now, folks, this is where we're at. This is our next step. Is the opening of the 7th seal. Now, Brother Johnson said the 7th seal opened in 1970, and that he had all the 7s. Now, I'm fixing to read to you about all these 7s. It could be explained that this brings us to the opening of the 7th seal of Revelation 8:1. The church on the 7th step, under the 7th seal, and in the 7th trumpet. By this we know we are on the borders of eternity. With the lips of any of us utter the words, the harvest is past, the summer is ended, and we are not saved. But how shall we attain this perfection? It will not be easy unless we make an effort, we shall never reach the mark, for the enemy is not leaving one string loose. He has interfered all the way, in every step and every part of the truth, and his plans are stronger now than ever before. Nevertheless, prophecy has declared that the 144,000 have not bowed a knee unto Baal. And in their mouth is found no guile, for they are without fault before the throne of Yahweh. At the present time, the denomination employs about 10,000 evangelical workers, but what will it be when 144,000 without guile, spot, or wrinkle, or any such thing, filled with the Spirit of Yahweh, compass the globe? Such is the beginning of the seventh step. Now, Brother Johnson says, I have all the sevens. We have all the sevens here at Gilead Center in 1970. He said, we have the year of 1970. There's your seven. He says, we have the seventh seal. We have the seventh trumpet. We got all sevens. So we have the seven doctrines. Mustard seed is the seventh, the grain of doctrine that goes with those six found in Ezekiel 4:9 that belongs to the Adventist Church. So we've added the seventh one, the mustard seed, Matthew 13:31. So I have all the seven. Okay. And he says we just entered into the seventh seal being opened by Revelation 8:1. So there's all your sevens. All your sevens. Seven steps, seven seal, seventh trumpet. Okay. Well, why is it then that Brother Johnson come to his end, Gilead Center came to his end, and that whole mountain has been dissolved. And it didn't produce anything. Didn't produce nothing. Well, I said it didn't. It produced the house of David. That's really what it was designed for. The third feeding pasture, Gilead Center, was designed to produce the house of David at its appointed time. And close out the fourth movement. Ellen G. White started in 1844 with the Adventists, and Brother Johnson ended the fourth movement in 2003 for the Advent. He brought the Adventist Church to a close. Okay. So now here we have it. So it says, such is the beginning of the seventh step. No wonder the people declared, the uncircumcised and the unclean shall no more pass into thee. Micah 4:7. Now that don't sound right. That into thee. That don't sound right. I'm gonna go read it from the scriptures. So that's correct. The circumcised and unclean shall no longer come into thee. Isaiah 52:7. Is it, while the prophecy of the 430 years finds its beginning with the Reformation by Luther and others, the lesson is for this time and the people at this age. Never before has this prophecy been understood, and until now, no one ever received much from it. But when the time is fulfilled, Yahweh makes it known. Thus has he led his people on and on. The verses not commented on will be considered now. The siege. Thou also, son of man, take thee a towel and lay it before thee and portray upon it the city, even Jerusalem, Ezekiel 4:1. Now the city is, in this prophecy, is the Adventist Church. Jerusalem is also the Adventist Church. The Hebrew translation reads, engrave upon it a city namely Jerusalem, the city, a symbol of the congregation's membership. Ezekiel was told to engrave a city and call it Jerusalem, and it must be engraved upon a tile. Paper or skin should not do, for it would not be as durable as tile. If it is engraved on a tile, it cannot be erased. The thought is that the prophecy will surely come to pass, and after it once becomes history, one cannot erase the things portrayed. It is there to stay through all ages. The tile mentioned here is not manufactured. It is a natural luminaire tile and quarried in the large self-separated slab, which is in the certain sections of that country is found in a great abundance. It is being largely or exclusively used for the roofing and flooring. Ezekiel 4:2, and lay siege against it, build a fort against it, and cast a mount against it, set the camp also against it, and set battering rams against it round about. Lay siege against it, that is, invade the city, the congregation of Israel, by an army. Let's do that again. That is, invade the city, the Seventh-day Adventist congregation, by an army, to compel its surrender and endeavor to obtain possession of the city, the SDA, and build a fort against it. So build a fort against it. A fort around a city makes it secure. So build a fort against it means to make sure that none escape. And cast a mount, the word mount in the Greek translation is rendered proho mata, meaning ramparts, which is an embankment surrounding a fort, thus making every effort and precaution to secure the city. Set the camp also against it, that is, make temporary lodging places. The thought is, make preparations to remain there until you have conquered the city. And set battering rams against it round about, or as in the margin, chief leaders, meaning, and an instrument in which to blow or strike. Ram is a male sheep, which is used as a symbol of Yahweh's men. And they are to batter around about until the city is taken. The instrument which they batter with a clear-cutting and convincing Bible truth, the city, the SDA, parentheses, Jerusalem, is Yahweh's congregation, namely the Seventh-day Adventist, parentheses, Israel. Yahweh himself organized this congregation by a prophet, Ellen G. White. And there is a great deal of difference between this congregation and the congregations during the Reformation from the Luther's time onward. Yahweh permitted his people to be voted out of the congregation by the majority in times past. And they were compelled to start another movement until the next step they were to make, and so on. In this case, Yahweh is to deal with the entire body. Now, that entire body includes the Shepherd Rod, the Davidian, Seventh-day Adventist, and the Branch Davidian, Seventh-day Adventist, Gilead Sinner. That makes up the entire body of the Seventh-day Adventists. H.T. Holliff was not aware of this when he wrote this. Those who sigh and cry for the abominations that are done in their congregation will be sealed by the man with the rider's inkhorn. Those who are determined to do evil, that is, do contrary unto the rules laid down by the Spirit of Yahweh, through the testimonies for the congregation will be destroyed by the five men with the slaughter weapon of Ezekiel 9. None can escape, for the city is besieged, fortified, and made sure. It is a fact that in every age where Yahweh demonstrated His truth and purpose in the clear lines after being rejected, that people suffered the vengeance of the all-powerful and great Yahweh. For instance, the antediluvian cities of Sodom, Egypt, Canaanites, Babylon, and ancient Jerusalem. Moreover, take thou unto thee an iron pan, and set it for a wall of iron between thee and the city, and set thy face against it, and it shall be besieged, and thou shalt lay siege against it. This shall be a sign of the house of Israel. Ezekiel 4:3. Take thou an iron pan, and set it for a wall of iron between thee and the city, the congregation, SDA, a symbol of an impregnable separation between the two classes. This does not mean that they do not see or speak to one another, but a separation in principle, rule, or guide, and set it, set thy face against it, as a general of armies sets his face against another nation with intent to conquer. This shall be a sign to the house of Israel. The sign is unto those who are marked or sealed, namely the 144,000, for they are Israel, the true. Time of the Spiritual Hunger is the subtitle for our next topic. Moreover, he said unto me, Son of Man, behold, I will break his staff of bread in Jerusalem. Now remember, he had Vitihalis had beat him with Jerusalem as in the parentheses as the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And they shall eat bread by weight and with care, and they shall drink water by measure, and with astonishment, that they may want bread and water, and be astonished one with another, and continue, and consume away in their iniquity. Ezekiel 4:16-17. Now the 13th verse applies to the time of 390 years. Okay. During this 390 years, that's in Ezekiel 4:16-17, starting with Martin Luther in 1500, it involved six steps of Reformation by six different congregations, but not six different movements. Only one movement evolved out of those six steps, and that was the last one, Ellen G. White, with the Adventist in 1844. No, I'm sorry. There was two movements that evolved out of those six congregations that was raised up, to restore all of the doctrines back into the purified congregation of Israel. So you had Martin Luther started in 1500. He was a reformer. He was the first reformer. 1543, John Knox was raised up as the second reformer, formed the Presbyterian congregation. Martin Luther formed the Lutheran congregation. And the third one raised up was John Wesley in 1725, that formed the Methodist congregation. The fourth one is Alexander Campbell, that formed, 1810, that formed the Baptist congregation. Now, after that, those four Reformed Well, you can call them movements if you want to, but they would be just a reform movement. And that was the reason why they would be called a movement, is because they had to break out of the Catholic Church in order to be given a reformed doctrine to direct back at the Catholic Church. So, and in the process, they formed another congregation. They formed another, what we call, church. So you had four churches formed since 1500 up to 1810. And then you had the prophetic movement that came in 1833 with William Miller as the fifth reformer. E.T. Hart calls him the fifth reformer. So likewise, I do the same. And he had the reform, and he was called at the sixth hour, according to Matthew 20, verse 5. And all those other reformers, they were called during a certain periodic hours, but they weren't pointed out in the scriptures. Whereas the reform movement by William Miller called it the sixth hour, the fifth reformer, with the prophetic doctrine of the 2300 days and the cleansing of the sanctuary. In other words, the 2300 days produced the doctrine of the cleansing of the sanctuary down in 814. And then Ellen G. White took the reins from William Miller, succeeded him, now William Miller represented the third movement since coming out of Egypt with Moses. Moses had the first movement, Yeshua had the second movement at the cross, and William Miller had the third movement in 1833, and Ellen G. White had the fourth movement in 1844. And Matthew 20, verse 1 through 5 covers those four movements. And then verse 6 covers the fifth movement, and the last one, and the 12th hour, and that's the one we represent. So, this is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with the first four Reformed doctrines dealt with trying to reform the Catholic Church on doctrine. The last three reform doctrines are movements. William Miller, third movement, Ellen G. White, the fourth movement, and the House of David, now is at the 12th hour of the fifth movement. So, those first six reformed doctrines, Luther through Ellen G. White, prophetically came to an end in 1890 at the Minneapolis Conference of Seventh-day Adventists with the General Conference President and his officers challenging Ellen G. White and her officers and ministers for the leadership of the Adventist Church. And we know the General Conference won out, and that brought the 390 days of Ezekiel's prophecy of Ezekiel 4 to a close. Okay. Ezekiel 4, I believe, says 16 and 17. To enter the time of the 40 years, the beginning of the 16th verse shows that there is a break in the prophecy, for we read, Moreover, he said unto me, that is, besides or furthermore, I will break the staff of bread in Jerusalem. I will cut down or set it on the decrees. That they shall eat bread by the weight and with care, and drink water by the measure and with astonishment, that is sparingly, until their supply of bread is exhausted, and they become hungry. Astonishment, that is, we would say that we have the truth, or Elohim's people, but we do not understand why thus and so power is lacking and there is something wrong. For the 17th verse is the fulfillment of the prophecy contained in Ezekiel 4:16. The Dewey version seems to make it clear, from which Ezekiel 4:17 is here quoted. So, that when bread and water fail, every man may fall against his brother, and they may pine away in their iniquity. The beginning of the verse in the Greek and the Bulgarian are the same, with the exception that the word people is used instead of brother. The Hebrew translation renders, in order that they may want bread and water and be confounded one with the other and pine away in their iniquity, so that when bread and water fail, every man may fall. Do it. That is, in the time of the 40-year period, they will exhaust their supply of bread and water, spiritual, and become real hungry, so that they may discover their mistake, according to Testimonies to Ministers, page 419. Yahweh requires certain things of his people if they say, I will not give up my heart to do this thing. The Yahweh lets them go on in their supposed wise judgment without heavenly wisdom until this scripture, Isaiah 28:13, is fulfilled. You are not to say, I will follow the Yahweh's guidance up to a certain point that is in harmony with my judgment, and then I hold fast unto your own ideas, refusing to be molded after the Yahweh's similitude. Let the question be asked, is this the will of the Yahweh? Not, is this the opinion or judgment of the Yahweh? Judgment of any one person. But the word of the Yahweh was unto them, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, and there a little, that they might go and fall backward and be broken and snared and taken. Isaiah 28:13. Testimonies of Ministers, pages 105-107. We are not to think, as did the Jews, that our own ideas and opinions are infallible, nor with the papists that certain individuals are the sole guardians of the truth and knowledge, that men have no right to search the scriptures for themselves, but must accept the explanation given by the fathers of the church. Those who allow prejudice to bar the mind against the reception of the truth cannot receive the divine enlightenment. Yet when a view of the scriptures presented, then you do not ask, is it true in harmony with Yahweh's word, but by whom is it advocated? And unless it comes through the very channel that pleases them, they do not accept it. So thoroughly satisfied are they with their own ideas that they will not examine the scripture evidence for the desire to learn, but refuse to be interested merely because of their prejudices. The Yahweh often works where we least expect him. He surprises us by revealing his power through the instruments of his own choice, while he passes by the men unto whom we have looked as those through whom light should come. Yahweh desires us to receive the truth upon its own merit, because it is the truth. But beware of rejecting that which is the truth, for the great danger with our people has been that of depending upon men and making flesh their arm. Those who have not been in the habit of searching the Bible for themselves or weighing evidence have confidence in the leading men and accept the decisions they make. And thus, many will reject the very messages Elohim sends unto his people if these leading brethren do not accept them. No one should claim that he has all the light there is for Yahweh's people. The Yahweh will not tolerate this. He has said, I have set before thee an open door, and no man can shut it. Even if all our leading brethren should refuse light and truth, that door will still remain open. Yahweh will raise up men who will give the people the message for this time. Suppose your brother held a view different from yours, and he should come unto you, proposing that you sit down with him and make an investigation of that point in the scriptures. Should you rise up filled with prejudice and condemn his idea while refusing to give him a candid hearing? The only right way would be to sit down as Christians and investigate the position presented in the light of Yahweh's word, which will reveal truth and unmask error. To ridicule his ideas would not weaken his position in the least if it were false, or strengthen your position if it were true. If the pillars of our faith will not stand the test of investigation, it is time that we knew it. There must be no spirit of Phariseeism cherished among us. Though one may stubbornly dispute the direct application of the scriptures quoted here, certainly none would question the lesson taught in this publication and yet claim to be in harmony with the movement. Okay. This brings the end of our study for this hour. We will now close this service with a song. Through that much door standing, at my door is standing, patiently drawing near, interest within demanding, is this a voice I hear? Sweetly the tones are falling, open your door. Thou will heed my calling, Thou will abide with me. All through the dark hours dreary, knock he again is he. Joshua, thou not weary, waiting so long for me. Sweetly the tongues are falling, open the door for me. If thou heed my calling, I will abide with thee. Door of my heart I hasten, he will open mine. Though he rebuke and chasten, he shall with me abide. Sweetly the tongues are falling, open the door for me. If thou heed my calling, I will hop on with thee.